you got to have the principles and the strategies in place. You have to understand them at least. And then if you know that, you can deploy your own tactics. You can start creating your own tactics rather than just following tactics from somebody else.
You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
This is episode 741, and today I have a copywriting and marketing expert that I'll be interviewing on today's masterclass here. So I'm going to be interviewing, as you're about to hear, Paul Docampo, who started in 2016 as a wholesaler. He was also flipping mobile homes. He got into some land notes, and that's when he kind of discovered his love and his expertise for copywriting and marketing, where he landed his first client in 2017, my good friends over at Carrot, Trevor Mock and crew. So since then, guys, he has been focused on providing customizations and writing and consulting professionally for coaches, for software companies, service providers in the real estate investing space. And really what he's focusing on and what he's done today is he's merged his expertise in copywriting and marketing. He obviously has a real estate investing background and he's got the knowledge there. And he's created a company called OmniDrip that essentially helps direct to seller investors convert more leads into deals using a very unique copy driven follow up drip system, which is pretty much near autopilot. So on today's podcast, guys, we're going to give you some practical principles, strategies, and tactics that are going to help you take existing leads or help you generate more leads, help you increase conversions so that you guys can close more deals, you can make more money. And so I truly believe, as you're about to hear, that I believe real estate investors are not the best marketers. So the aim of today's podcast is to make you a better marketer and ultimately generate more money, monetize more of the opportunities that you already have in your system. Guys, before we get started, if you have any questions, if you are interested in learning more about how you can generate cash flow and build wealth through self-storage without needing your own money or without necessarily having any experience, go to www.storagewinds.com, storagewinds.com. Take a minute to just fill out that information. We'll schedule a call and I can share with you more about what I have going on and ultimately see if it's a fit. So guys, with that being said, let's transition into episode 741 with Paul from REI OmniDrip. What is going on, my friends? Guys, I'm very excited. I'm pumped because I get to put the student hat on, as I often do as the host of this particular podcast, because I get to interview brilliant minds, people that know so much more than me about business or a particular niche, a particular subject. And this is one area that I came into 2024 saying, I need to get better at two areas. I want to get better at sales and I want to get better at marketing. And so I hired a sales coach. I've been working in that area and I've been consuming and reading more marketing books, right? Like guys like Alex Hormozi. And a mutual friend, or a friend of mine, introduced me to another gentleman who's a good friend of his, a gentleman by the name of Paul Docampo. And the guy is an absolute stud when it comes to copywriting, when it comes to marketing, when it comes to how do you leverage words to generate more leads, increase conversions, which ultimately, guys, is going to lead to more deals and make more money, which I think was what most people want that are listening to a podcast like this. So I have some very specific questions I want to ask Paul about copywriting. And just know that I want you to lean into an episode like this because the goal here is to deliver nuggets that you guys can implement in your business to, again, generate more leads, increase conversions, which is going to lead to more deals and more money. And here's what I want to do. I want to encourage you guys to keep the conversation going online. So when my team publishes this and shares this, tag myself, tag Paul on social media and ask us questions because we really want to help you guys. That's why we do these shows. I just had the honor of being on Paul's REI OmniDrip podcast as well. And so great dude, putting out a lot of fantastic content. If you guys want to take your copywriting or your marketing in general to another level, I really want to encourage you to reach out to him at reiomnidrip.com. But with that being said, the purpose here is to deliver content, give you actionable content that you can implement in your business. So Paul, brother, I thank you for hopping on the show, man.
Appreciate being on here, man.
Well, dude, let me start here because I was sharing with you before I hit the record button that I genuinely believe, and I'm going to put myself in that category, although I've grown a little bit throughout the years, at least I'd like to think so, is that real estate investors absolutely suck when it comes to marketing. And hopefully I did not just like tune out my entire audience because I'm putting myself in that category. I just tend to think, Paul, that so many of us, we copycat, right? Like we look at letters, we swipe files, we deploy that marketing, and there's not a whole lot of ingenuity when it comes to marketing. And obviously, you know this better than most, is that marketing continues to evolve with the advent of AI that's been ongoing for years now and just all the different tools and resources we have. I really want to make us better marketers. So let's start and identify the problem and then let's get to the solution. But why is it that you feel most real estate investors, if you agree with me, are not the best marketers? And then we're going to start to actually get into how they can become better marketers and what are some specific principles, strategies, and tactics that they can implement in their business.
Yeah. So there's a whole plethora of things we can get into, but my company, OmniDrip, what we deliver is basically is the follow-up marketing. It's helping the people going after sellers, going after leads that have a whole mess of leads in their CRM, where what happens is the wholesaler, the flipper, whatever it is, their lead manager, the acquisition manager, the seller stops, the lead stops responding, stops texting them back. And then that lead falls to the wayside and then they forget about that lead. Maybe they put a manual task later, one or two, and they forget about it. And then what happens is that's the majority of seller leads. Then those majority of leads then end up selling with somebody else. So as long as you're doing like good quality lead generation, you're doing all that. It's not just crap junk leads. As long as you're generating a good amount of leads, a majority of them just aren't ready to sell yet. And they ghost you, they stop responding. It has nothing to do with you. Yep. They might tell you no to your offer. They might tell you, I'm just not ready yet. Whatever it is that's keeping them from selling now, the problem with wholesalers is that they go, okay, they put them to this bucket, forget about it. And they go after the hair on fire sellers they need to sell yesterday. And that's fine. I mean, those are deals now, but there's also deals here in this bucket that you're forgetting about. And the quote follow-up that they do is really shallow, hitting up with the task to call, hey, just checking up on you. Hey, I'm just following up. Hey, are you still interested in selling? They may use drip sequences, but those drip sequences weren't written by a marketer or a copywriter. And there's a whole lot of problems we can dive into. And well, so that's what basically what OmniDrip does is we create this semi-custom drip system for them that puts a seller in the right place so we can continue following up with that person until they tell you no, until they sell with you or whatever it is. Yeah. So that's essentially what we do is mainly the follow-up marketing. So, I mean, we could spend hours and hours talking about all the different copywriting avenues, the direct mail, the ads and all that, but OmniDrip is kind of what we focus on because that's the biggest hidden opportunity. Now, a lot of guys are good at the lead generation. They're cold calling. They got a team of cold callers. They're playing the numbers game. They're hitting it hard. They're generating it. But the hidden gaps, the hidden opportunities are those leads they generated. And they're only converting 5% or less percent of them. When adding maybe an extra point of conversion or two or three or even five, huge on the bottom line without the extra work, without having to hire more manpower too. So that's what the hidden opportunity is as a copywriter, as a marketer.
And I'm going to ask you some questions to dive further into those hidden opportunities and so that people can actually walk away with some actionable content here. But I think what I find fascinating, brother, is that I always hear about real estate investors trying to find the shiny object, the latest and greatest marketing strategy, what's working now. I'm part of a number of masterminds and oftentimes the conversation is, hey, what are you doing for marketing? What's working? What's not working? I think what's right hidden in plain sight is that you have leads in your CRM. You have deals that you're not currently monetizing because you don't have a drip sequence or a follow-up email campaign, and you're not really maximizing the opportunities that you have right in front of you to monetize, right? And the most expensive lead, I believe, Paul, is the one you don't have, right? So you've already spent hard-earned money to generate leads. So what Paul's going to share with you guys is how you can go back to your CRM, regardless of what you're using, and monetize the opportunities that you've forgotten about, that you haven't followed up with. And then we're going to talk about how do you improve your follow-up. So with that being said, brother, like this is the hidden opportunity. You talked about the gaps. Do you find that most investors just don't have automated follow-up sequences in place? Or do you think the problem lies more in the quality of the copy, the content that they're actually putting in front of the prospect?
Yeah, I'd say it's both. I mean, if you don't have that in place, I mean, you're operating more on a manual basis. And you know what? Let me tell you a story of how I got into this business and that ties into that. I started in 2015, 2016, like everybody jumped into wholesaling, jumped into sending out lots of direct mails, getting leads. I came from blue collar my whole life and like same background as you. Nobody in my family has an entrepreneur mind. But same reasons as a lot of people drove me to start wholesaling. And so I spent a lot of money on direct mail. I was cold calling. I was door knocking in like gang infested areas. Actually, just getting chased down by some gangbangers.
Ouch.
And yeah. That's a fun story. But
well, dude, at some point, we got to carve out some time to hear that story.
Okay. Yeah. We can get into it. But basically, I started off door knocking foreclosures and probate leads, the executor homes, the heirs. We have our list and we just hit up every weekend, hit up those houses. There's probably better ways to do it now that I'm thinking about it. I was like, this game is a volume game. And if I'm hitting up 10 houses, this is on a side note, it's probably a tip for a lot of people that are struggling for deals. Is most likely you're not doing enough, right? If you're only door knocking 10 houses per weekend, I hate using the cliche 10X, but in this case, it's true. You probably have to 10X the amount of activity that you're doing. So anyway, I was door knocking. We were door knocking in a place called Pomona, California, which is where when LA was kicking and cleaning out their gang infested neighborhoods, those gangs migrated east to Pomona and to San Bernardino. So we were door knocking in Pomona doing a foreclosure list. Or pre-foreclosure list, I should say. And my partner at the time, I met him at a mastermind, and he's Black. I mean, I hate to bring race into it, but I mean, it's relevant to the story. Here's me, a white guy. Here's a Black guy walking down the streets of a neighborhood that happens to be run by a Latino gang. So there's not a good duo here walking down the street. And then we were sitting in his car, which happens to be a souped up BMW. And we're going through our leads, talking about it. All of a sudden, a car pulls up. And they roll down their windows and start throwing gang signs at us. I'm like, what the heck? Okay. They peel out, take off the other way, and then they make a U-turn behind us and then park right behind us. And they start opening the doors. They're like, oh, dude. Oh. So he just gassed and took off. And then they're chasing us. They're chasing us in their car in Pomona. And I'm trying to get on the phone line and I'm on hold. I'm on wait with them. And eventually, finally, you know, they're tailing us, but eventually we lose them. They probably lose interest or whatever. And that's it. So...
Yeah, dude. I mean, you got a story out of it now, but I couldn't imagine, dude, like the adrenaline, the heart must have been pumping. Like you may have been questioning, like, why did we decide to start door knocking in this particular neighborhood?
Right. So yeah, door knocking is rough. Although you can learn a lot from door knocking, you know, getting belly to belly with people. But going back to direct mail, I was cold calling, I was doing a lot of direct mail. I had a CRM. It was Podio at the time. Mm-hmm. At the time, that's all you had, right? And you don't have all these big box CRMs now that wholesalers have access to. I had drip sequences because they had a couple. They had a couple like RVM blast drip sequences and things like that. And so I was using all that. But then I remember every, like, I think it was Saturday, I'd go and follow up with my leads. Okay, I have my list, go through my list. And I say, okay, Mrs. Sally here. Okay, I called her 2 weeks ago, but I have a manual task to call. I feel like she's not ready. Let me go ahead and push her to another 2 weeks. And then so on it went where my feelings were dictating when and how I followed up, right? And then it kind of be a little, so what I'm getting at with this is the first like principle to this is a system. Because if you either have a system or you're doing everything manually like I was doing, if you're doing everything manually, meaning you or somebody on your team, you're relying on them to set the appropriate tasks to follow up. And knowing what to say and when to say it, it's just all feeling based. And you don't really have a follow-up system. You just have, hey, when I feel like it, I'll call them back. Does that make sense?
It does.
And that's okay if you're brand new. And you know, I'm not saying to start worrying about that now. You probably have other problems to deal with if you're brand new. But if you're doing a couple deals here and there and you're trying to scale up and get things going, most likely you have a problem with your follow-up system, quote system. And so you get the seller all the time that tells you, hey, I'm going to go and sell in 6 months from now. Okay, cool. You set a task to call them up in 6 months. You call them up and either like one or two things happen. One, they sold to somebody else, or two, they don't remember who you are. And so because 6 months have broken up there, so they don't remember you.
In 6 weeks, they probably won't remember you. So imagine 6 months.
Yeah. So one thing that we put into place is we do have follow-up in between that as well. Like, so it's not just, hey, are you still looking to sell? Hey, that you're becoming a pest. That type of messaging, by the way, is, hey, are you looking to sell? Hey, are you interested in a cash offer? Those direct questions, 100% self-serving. It's not really copywriting. That's just a direct question, which works sometimes. Dean Jackson, I don't know if you've started reading.
The nine-word email or the...
Nine-word email. You mentioned principles, strategies, and tactics. It's a great tactic to revive people again, to see if they're still interested, right? Yeah. But you can use that over and over.
That's right. That's right.
It's not meant to. It's a tactic for a specific reason, okay? Going back to what you said, principle, strategy, and tactics. When people start copying and swiping tactics without understanding what the principle was, what the strategy was, they're going to be swiping tactics in the wrong ways. And it's not going to work. And then they're going to blame the person who they got it from. It's like, oh, this doesn't work for me.
Dude, that's so true.
You got to have the principles and the strategies in place. You have to understand them at least. And then if you know that, you can deploy your own tactics. You can start creating your own tactics rather than just following tactics from somebody else. So yeah, I mean, that would be the strategy, right? A follow-up system that follows up multiple times, not just setting the manual task, you know, when they tell you to. And what happens when somebody ghosts you? Do you have a system for that? Most people, they put these type of leads into like a no contact bucket or a ghosted bucket, right? The problem with that bucket is now you have people in there that are landlords. You have people there that have a vacant house, owner occupant. You have people there that haven't gotten an offer, that have gotten an offer. So you have this whole like minutia of different people. You can't target them in your copy at all.
That's right.
I can't tell them, there's no call to action. What's the call to action? Because if they haven't gotten an offer, that's my call to action, right? But if they have gotten an offer already, the call to action may be, hey, can we look over your cash offer again? Hey, it's been 3 months now. Can we go over a new offer for you? The market's changed. That's things right. like that. So yeah, having everybody all in one bucket, you can't say anything, but are you still interested in selling?
It's more of a general top of the funnel type of message versus if we're talking to somebody who's going through probate versus through somebody who's going through a divorce, it's different messaging. Right? It's a different tone and the copy is different. But to your point, Paul, if you're just putting all your motivated seller leads in quotes in one bucket, your message has to be more general and vague. Hey, we're gonna offer cash and pay on your timeline, which is all the boring, crappy copy that I see most real estate investors, even to this day, still use. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. So we have about 20 sequences that we set up for. And I would say situational sequences don't exist that much, except foreclosure sequence and probate sequence. But like, I wouldn't set up a divorce sequence. We don't set up divorce sequences or tax default sequences or any other sequence like that, because I don't particularly call out those
situations. Correct. Yeah, it's a sensitive situation.
Right. Now we're getting into like the copy, like 101, like, well, what do you say, right? So somebody who's going through divorce and somebody who is, let's say, just inherited a house, they have deep problems that are very different. But the solution of an offer, pretty similar, right? So the solutions are going to be, you're solving the hassle of an unwanted house, right? Getting the quick sale. So what I instead for my sequences is we break it into the pipeline. So meaning from what happens when a lead enters in your CRM, okay? That's probably like the missed, that's top of funnel. That's they called in or they filled out a form. Well, that's two of our first sequences there. Then from there, you have appointment booked. Then you have a missed appointment. They missed appointment. Then you have no appointment, no offer, meaning, hey, they said either they're not ready yet or they ghosted you anywhere in between here, right? Then you have, hey, they received your offer, but they said no. Any one of those, I break up into vacant house, owner occupant, and landlord, because then I can start like leveraging the different pain points, right? If it's a landlord, I can start talking about the actual benefits of our cash offer for a landlord, meaning, hey, we can buy with your tenants in place. Hey, you don't have to make any of those repair things. All the little problems I can address within the copy of the messaging, the emails or the auto text messages.
Got it. So, Paul, one question that's bouncing around in my head, brother, that I'm curious how you handle is, let's say you put somebody in a particular follow-up sequence or drip campaign that is for somebody who's ghosted you, right? And all of a sudden they get in contact with you, you have a conversation and you've realized that, hey, they're a burnt out landlord. Are you able to in your system or how is it that you automatically stop the non-follow-up drip sequence and put them into like now the landlord burnt out sequence as an example?
The whole point of the drip sequence is to get them to re-engage with you again. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the point. Well, I mean, that's not the whole, I mean, that is the point, but there's branding, there's credibility, there's trust building, something we didn't talk about.
Exactly.
Right? It's trust. We're trying to build trust. A lot of investors forget that. I think when you look at their branding, they forget like the number one factor for somebody to make a decision is trust. The bottom 100%. Line, you can't make transactional decisions until they trust you. Going back to your question, so if you get them to respond back, usually this is like more of the technical side of things, but usually want the follow-up to stop. because now you're having a face-to-face conversation to move them down the pipeline. Mm-hmm. So it's all about, quote, mini sales, right? So in sales, it's like we're making little commitments. What's the first commitment we have to make with a seller or a lead, I should say? They're not a seller yet, but what's the first commitment? Well, they have to get on an appointment with us, right? Mm-hmm. We have to know the details. We got to get. Then the next commitment is giving them the offer. The next commitment is the decision for that offer, right? And then the next commitment is signing the contract. Then the deal's closed. I have a fifth commitment, which nobody actually does, but they should, is give you a review or testimonial. And then I have a sixth commitment, which is getting them to give you a referral later down the road, wow, right?
Huge.
I mean, we should be like review, testimonial, acquisition business, as well as a house acquisition business, right? We should be in our effort, putting in our system, collecting reviews and testimonials, because at the end of the day, that's what helps sell people make that buying decision, right? You're going to get the sellers that like their hair is on fire. They don't care who they go with. Mm-hmm. That's probably like 1% of your leads, right? If that. You're going to get those, but investors are all aiming towards that. Instead, you should be aiming towards the larger population that's skeptical. They still are motivated to sell. They have a reason to sell at a discount, but they're treading very carefully right now.
Yeah.
Those are the ones you need to sell. And you need to sell with social proof, with them trusting you, with you having credibility, and with you following up frequently. So frequency, that I'm mentioning it, that's probably a big mistake that I see with people with drip sequences that the CRMs have in place or whatever, is their frequency is almost is like non-existent. Like they're sending a message maybe once every 2 months. Maybe I saw one that was 5 messages in 1 year. I'm like, it's nothing. They don't remember. Again, we're going back to the whole point of a follow-up is build the trust, build the credibility, right? Can't do that with just a handful of, hey, are you still interested in selling type of sequences?
Yeah.
Right. That relies on luck. So go ahead.
Paul, I was going to ask you, man, as it relates to sequencing, or I should say frequency, have you found the sweet spot, or is this a classic? It depends. Like, in other words, is 3 to 4 emails a week mixed in with a couple of text messages? Like, what have you found to be the right amount of touch points? And then how many different types of touch points make up a really good like follow-up or drip sequence?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So what we found is it depends on where in the funnel they're at, the seller's at. So top of funnel, we have our most aggressive sequences. They miss what I call the missed call, the form filled. Those are people that inquired. That one has about, like my form filled one, has about 7 steps in 1 day. So 7 steps. A step consists of text message, email, tasks for calling, direct mail as well. We add direct mail follow-up into these drip sequences. They're automated out. Yeah, they're automated out. It's not like you have to go and load up a list and send it. No, it just, when the lead is traveling through your drip sequence, through your workflow and in your CRM, it talks to the print house and the print house fires a specific follow-up mail that I have about 30 different mailers that fire off, or one will fire off. Now, that's not saying that a lead is going to get 30 different mailers, but they might get 1, 2, maybe 3 or 4 mailers in their lifetime from you in your drip sequences. So anyway, so that one has 7 steps in 1 day. So highly aggressive. The next day might have 6. The next day might have 5 steps. Now, a lot of people might think that's a lot, but if you read them, and if anybody contacts me, I'll give you like a sample of what that one looks like. If you read them, it's conversational. It's not very in your face. It's very like, hey, forgot to mention, if you want to book a call with us, go to our calendar link here. Hey, just forgot to mention, we have a bunch of articles on selling your house quickly. Check it out here, right? So these are tactics to get them to engage with us. So it's not just about the reply. I'm trying to build credibility and trust from the beginning.
Yep.
So if they click on my article, they go to my article, they're now on my website. Now that's 2 touches, right? I'm building that trust with them now. I mentioned a calendar link or a booking link. I know that when you get a PPC lead or PPL lead coming to the system,
you got to get them on the phone ASAP.
Yeah. So one of the call to actions we implement, and we've seen, we have some partners that told us these numbers, that they see a 30% increase in booked appointments on their calendar when they early on, they have that booking calendar. So it's like, hey, got to mention, book a call with us here. Pushes them to the booking link. They can book a call with you on your calendar to get on either phone appointment or face-to-face, whatever it is. So different call to actions, reply back via text, call back, call to action, or book a call, go to my website, things like that. So
got it. And are your call to actions, Paul, are they embedded within or at the end of some content marketing, or sometimes are some of your follow-up messages just a specific like call to action? You know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think I know what you're asking. So yeah, 90% of the content usually has a call to action. That call to action could be go to a website, go to the link, check out what other sellers say about us. If you have reviews, yep. we make sure that we really leverage those. It might be, hey, call me back, or it just might be just a question mark. We have some typo messages that go out too to make it look like it's more personal.
I like that.
Yeah. And so I'd say 90% have a call to action. Even the articles we plug into, they aren't SEO articles. They're written as like mini sales letters, sort of. Mm-hmm. You know, they're informative, but then at the end, there's a call to action about giving us a call. So did that answer your question?
Yeah. That does answer my question. And you would subscribe to the thinking, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that every touch point should have a call to action?
Yeah, almost. I mean, that's old Gary. I mean, you were studying some guys now. That's the old direct response mentality, is everything has a call to action. And yeah, I subscribe to that. Yeah, again, that's more strategy based, but then there's times that the tactic doesn't call for that as well. So yeah, I'd say about 90% of the time I do subscribe to that principle, or maybe it's a strategy of everything has a call to action.
Got it. And then my apologies if I missed it, Paul, but I want to make sure, if we did, we could touch on it briefly here. But like, so obviously I know you guys are sending out direct mail, you're sending out emails. Are there also other things like text messages, voice broadcasts that go out? People have to be in compliance with a lot of the laws depending on where they're marketing, and that's something to be made aware of. But are there any other types of touch points within these sequences?
Yeah, 100%. So the ringless voicemail, we don't really do. We don't really touch those because you have some disadvantages if you do that. There's legal things. I'm not a lawyer, so.
Right.
But then there's the other aspect on a marketing side of point. I don't like using RVMs, a ringless voicemail, because you are limiting the pool of people who are going to actually listen to it. So I do tasks for calling. And so as you put somebody into a lead, or as you put a lead into a sequence, there's a mix of, depending on what sequence it is, of emails, SMS, and tasks to call. There's other tasks too, I'll get into that, but tasks to call. Those tasks are gonna have instructions. I'm gonna tell your lead manager, your acquisition manager, or you, call this lead, then text this lead. So you call them, they don't answer. There's a voicemail script we write for each single one. Here's the voicemail script for you to follow. And then afterwards it says, then text them this, manually text them. So imagine you, and you're managing these leads, and then you get a task and it says, hey, call and text this lead. And you're like, okay, you log in, you see the lead. Okay, it's Mrs. Sally. Okay, let me go ahead and give her a call with the voicemail script or framework. Think of it as a framework that Paul left me here. You call, they don't answer, you leave them a voicemail, and then you copy and paste that text and send it. Hey, just letting you know, I just sent you a text message about your property. Can you check it out? Something to that effect. There's different manual texts. But the point of that is that's three touches, right? So now you have a missed call notification on your phone. If you're the seller, you get a missed call notification, you get a voicemail notification, and then you get a text message about it. Yeah. So when I log into clients' accounts and CRMs to see, okay, what's working, what's not working, I'll pull out we'll look at deals made through these sequences. And then I'll look at the average amount of touches. Some CRMs are really good about this, and they tell you how many touches does it take for this deal to be closed. I'm seeing numbers of 70, 60, 80. I saw one the other day of 180 touches to close a deal.
Wow. What happened, dude? What happened to back in the day when I always read in the Dan Kennedy books or some of these other like famous marketers that it usually takes 6, 7, 8, 9 touch points to get a deal? Now it's like 10x. That is what I'm hearing from you.
Well, yeah, but that is for lead generation. And you should only keep it at that much because, I mean, lead generation is expensive. You're in wholesaling, you're paying $150 to $300 per lead. Sometimes there's some PPL
even product. More.
There are $700 per lead. I mean, they're quality leads. It's a lot more. So you don't want to then get into this whole thing. I'm talking about the follow-up touch of people who have been in your system already, which is the cheapest way to follow up. We talked about lead generation being expensive. You're spending $150 on average or more, $200 per lead to bring that person into your CRM. And it costs you to follow up with them. If you implement direct mail, for example, probably costs you like an extra $5-$10 to follow up with that person. You're adding on your costs, nothing. And then if you have a system that's working in the background, even more so hands off for you, you know, there's still calls you have to make, but I mean, making calls is a lot easier than digging holes.
I like
to dig holes for a living. So
did you really?
Yeah, I was a pipeline welder.
I didn't know that.
Natural gas company. Yeah. And so I started off though as a laborer, digging the holes and digging 3-foot, 4-foot depth holes and laying pipe. And then I went into, became an excavator. So I was actually running the backhoe and then became a pipeline welder, running a crew. So I quit that back about 3 years ago. I stopped doing that for freedom. Yeah. So that's another whole part of my story. But yeah.
Interesting, man. Good for you, brother. Well, as we start to kind of wind down here, Paul, like one of the things that I always remember from Dan Kennedy is he always talks about like, we need to enter the conversation that our prospects are having at that time. And I think one of the value that your service provides is that you're setting up basically what sounds to me like done for you auto drip campaigns and sequences that are going to work when people are not working, right? And I think part of the challenge with having these types of systems is that people either don't make the time to create them, they don't have the competency or the expertise to know what to say, and then it all requires on them to remember or when they feel like following up. And to your point early in the conversation, that's not a system. It might be a system, but it's a terrible system, right? It's one that's inconsistent, that's not going to lead to consistent, predictable, reliable results. For people that want to reach out to you, I want to address two points. Where can people reach out to you and connect with you if they see the value in bringing in someone like you, a service where it sounds like it's you kind of get to know them, their business, and then you create custom messaging in a sequence format and then kind of help install or implement that in their business? Is that right?
Yeah. So first off, they can reach me at reiomnidrip.com. They can get the samples right there. They can book a call with me. Okay. I have a demo and I have samples somewhat we deliver. I call it semi-custom. If I say it's custom, that means I'm there writing for them 100% of the time. I've implemented software that when they order with me, I get with them. It's me. We do a little onboarding to get to know their business. Make sure things aren't clashing. They may already have processes in place. I want to make sure that's still in place and that we're just adding on.
Okay.
And then they fill out a form that tells us a little bit about their business. I want to make sure that, hey, if they're face-to-face 100% of the time with sellers, we want to make sure the messaging matches that, right? That's why copying other people's templates, it works against you because for one, you either have to go through every single one and make sure that doesn't say anything like, let's just say you're 100% on the phone type of wholesaler. Mm-hmm. And it says something, I want to meet up at your house for an offer. That makes no sense. You do 100%, right? So you have to go through every single one, make sure it jives with you, or you're using 100% generic, which doesn't do anything. That's why a lot of people say drip sequences don't work because people then pre-think about this stuff and they're not copywriters and not marketers. So
that's right.
So we try to fit the messaging. We have hundreds and hundreds of messages. I've been creating a little more like SOPs and stuff within our business and getting like some KPIs. And it takes us about 10 to 15 hours to actually install these content into somebody's CRM and website because it's a ton of content. Right. So yeah, long answer, we do install it into their system and we make sure that everybody knows how to use it. We do some live lead dropping into the sequences and we're updating as we go because these things change, right? If you think about it, going back to tactics only work like a set period of time. Things change, things evolve. So
that's right.
We're changing. So
to your point earlier about the Dean Jackson 9-word email, that's a tactic, right? Imagine if you use that every week. Before long, it's just not effective, right? It's like white noise.
And imagine if you use it, and even going deeper to that, if you only use what you're given, you don't alter it. Like we use the 9-word email, like we use that tactic. We do. Mm-hmm. I mean, where it makes sense, but I don't just copy it from somebody else. In different sequences, I fit it to where it makes sense for this particular lead. Like if it's a landlord. So it's changing because by just saying the same 9-word email kind of sounds very robotic, right?
So that's right. I'm trying to think about people listening to the show and I'm 1,000% certain there's at least some people out there saying, what's this 9-word email that you guys have alluded to at least a couple of times? So what is the 9-word email?
So I don't want people to think too tactically about, oh, I got to make sure it says 9 words. It's not the number that makes it sell. It's just really simply the, are you interested selling type of question. Dean Jackson, he's really well known for it. Not because he invented it, some kind of sexy tactic. It's just because he just started publishing more about it. And he starts telling people, use this tactic for those leads that you just, that are like dead leads. I think that's what the slogan or the title or the headline was, like reviving dead leads or something. And it was, if they already know you, it's not something to use for people that 100% cold. He talks about real estate agents quite a bit. So if it's like, you're an agent and you have these sellers back in the day that you've spoken to, it's like, you haven't heard back from them, sending them this 9-word email, which is something of like, hey, are you actually still selling your house or did you end up selling already? Just to get a response back. The whole purpose is get that response back. There's multiple ways to get responses. That's not the only way to get a response, by the way. Just inject that into your sequences. Think tactically. Don't think of it as like, this is the strategy that works for Paul, so I'm going to use it. No, think through about the conversations you're having with sellers. And anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And ending with a question mark, not putting like, you know, best or regards or your name, like literally just ending with a question.
Yeah. As if you just fired it off right then and there.
Right? That's right. Yeah. Think about how you might write to a close friend or family member, right? Yeah. So one other thing I want to share with people, Paul, before we start to transition here and wind this down is pay attention and be aware to the emails that capture your attention that make you want to open them, right? Because those are the things that maybe now you can start to inject into some of your copy or into some of your sequences, right? So maybe you're in a position where like you want to hire Paul, you want to work with him so that he can install like the semi-custom sequence in your business. But maybe you're in a position where you're like, hey, I don't have the resources or I have the time. Start to think just as a practical tip about like, hey, what are the types of emails that compel me to click and open it up, right? So start to think about what drives humans and what gets us to act, right? Like that was a brief conversation we had before we started recording is I tend to get fascinated by like the psychology of money, like books like that. And like what gets us to want to make decisions. And one of the things I've learned in sales is that we buy based on emotion and then we back it up by logic, right? So I see you smiling. So I'll let you kind of like wrap this thought up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, 100% the emotional part of things. I mean, with the house buying business, that emotion, yeah, it's a little harder to tap into. Sure. It's not harder when you're face-to-face, right? When you're face-to-face and the person's having, they're ready to sell, you can tap into that motion. Sales and marketing, they're parallel universes, right? Mm-hmm. They work off the same laws of the universe. So how do I use emotion inside of emails and drip sequences and text messaging? Going down into the tactics and the media matters, whether it's text or email. But I'd say email is one of the best places you can really tap into this. And because that's the place where it's long form, where now I can tell stories. Like as a salesman, you should be like understanding, or it doesn't matter what you sell, you should really be understanding what is the emotion behind your customer, behind your client, behind your seller.
That's right.
And one of the best sources for you to like look into this is go to Reddit and type in like, listed my house 4 times, couldn't sell my house, all these little problems, and then read the problems that people are seeing.
Oh, that's good, like, man.
I take those actually, and I turn them into emails for my clients.
I love it.
There's like stories of people who did an open house and they did it 4 times and the last person left feces all over the walls. So like, I remember when I started and I was struggling, I didn't come from sales or marketing. I came from blue collar. So I didn't know how to sell. So getting face to face, I was struggling closing deals. And so, an old school investor pulled me to the side and said, hey, write down 100 different ways that you benefit a seller. So what he's getting me to do is dive deeper into than the offer. Everyone go, the cash offer is shallow. It doesn't mean anything. It is just a feature, right?
Right.
Features and benefits. If you want to dive into copywriting 101, there's features and benefits. You can dive into the difference. But there's real sellers that have problems and offer gives a solution to. And that solution can be, hey, they're too embarrassed to put a sign up in their house. Maybe, you know, they don't want to tell their neighborhood that they're actually selling. They love that neighborhood, but they're falling behind the payments and they can't make that sale. They're too embarrassed to open their house up to the public. They're a hoarder. They don't want people to walk through it. Things like that. So these emotions are real emotions that we can tap into as salespeople. So
I love it, man. Well, hey, I want to acknowledge you, man. I want to thank you for the knowledge and expertise that you've brought to the show today. And so for people that want to connect with you, go ahead, www.reiomnidrip.com, reiomnidrip.com. And I'm assuming there's going to be a web form there, Paul, where people can just take a minute or two, submit their information, and then you or someone on your team will be in contact with them.
Yeah, they can book a call with me right there on my website, or they can download some samples. So, yep.
Okay, fantastic, guys. And by the way, even if you're maybe not interested in working with Paul, but you want to see some of those samples, reach out to him, have a conversation, get access to some of those resources. Potentially, that could be something that you can piggyback off of if you have the time and you have the energy to go ahead and put this together yourself. So guys, with that said, really want to thank you and appreciate you for spending your time with us. The way that you can repay us, guys, is speed of implementation, right? So take something that you learn from what Paul shared today, implement it in your business, because we do this because we want to help. We want to see you guys prosper and succeed in your business. So anything that we can do to further those goals or to support you in any way, please reach out, let us know. And then make sure that you're subscribed to the Flip Empire Show so that you're notified every single Monday morning when new shows get released. So thank you guys so much. And I look forward to connecting with you on the next one. Take care, Paul.
Take care.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, you know, I've had a lot of people recently reach out to me wanting to learn more about Ascend, wanting to understand how the mastermind component works, how the coaching relationship works. And so right now we're actually on a waiting list. But what I would encourage you to do is, if you think you're the right fit and you think you could benefit from being a part of our community, head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, watch the short video, and then just click the apply to join button below. And then we'll be in contact with you if and when a spot opens up. So really appreciate you listening to Flip Empire here, and I look forward to connecting with you on the next show. Take care.